We're back, aren't we, Travis?
Yeah, we are.
Another Give Us the Launch Codes episode on the beautiful sunny day in the park. Nice. I heard you got another awesome interview for us.
Yeah. One of my brothers-in-law, I won't say which one or how he relates, but he does karate. And he was like a real karate kid, if you will. So we talked. Also, in this park. I needed to get out. You know, it's summer. I don't have air conditioning in my living room. And it's like...
Those old Long Beach houses. Those old ones, huh? Old.
Yeah. They just need to, you know, the breeze is much nicer, so...
Oh, this is our new studio for a little bit. I'd like it. I'd be down. All right, let's have a listen to your brother-in-law, who I work with. Hey!
Hey, everybody. I'm out here in a park on the most beautiful day I've ever seen. I'm out here with one of my brothers-in-law, the one I'm most close to, I think it's fair to say. This is James.
How's it going, everybody?
Even though the other interviews we've talked to people about their jobs, but we're not talking about your jobs, we're talking about a passion. I don't want to call it a hobby. I feel like you'd be insulted by that, and I feel like you've accomplished too much for me to call it a hobby. But you do karate.
Yes.
In fact, you don't just do karate, you are a third degree black belt, I understand.
That is correct.
Ooh, which I understand is like, I don't know, like getting your Eagle Scout in Boy Scouts, which we both did.
Yes.
I'll start with this. What is a karate?
I've never heard it suggested as a karate before, but I think a more broader term is probably martial art. I'm a Kenpo practitioner, which is a Chinese-based martial art with some Japanese influences. It's a stand-up martial art, but occasionally we do grappling. We do groundwork, wrestling. But I've heard one man say that another name for it is overkill because of the amount of hand strikes that we learn. And we learn there's classical, practical, and tactical defenses. So classic work, which is the classical style of training that we do, that we learn from the monks, because it has some Shaolin influences. So we also do some weapons defenses. We learn to defend against knives, and when someone comes at you with a baton. I wasn't talking about like weapons like no one's coming out with you with a sword or anything. We are beyond those times now. A lot of things that we do also as well is sparring. So with sparring, what we get to do, we get to practice how we would use the moves in a fight. For lack of a better term, a kickboxing match, if you will. We do all sorts of hand strikes and all sorts of kicks and combinations, and that's how we get to practice them. And we hit each other, and we make each other better for it.
It's very self-defense oriented, what you do.
Yes.
I know there are different types of martial arts. My dad used to be in Taekwondo, and he almost got a black belt in Taekwondo, and then my mom got injured, and then he had to stop doing it and never got back. But there's Taekwondo. I've heard of Kung Fu. I've heard of, I don't know if Tai Chi counts as a martial art, but there are many different martial arts. What is so unique about karate compared to the others?
Well, I would say that it's... they all have their uniqueness to them. With karate, what makes it unique is the origin where it came from. Because there was a guy named William Chow, and he was a Hawaiian guy. He was the reason why Kenpo came to Hawaii. If you want to go deeper into that, then there was another guy named Ed Parker from the 1950s, and he brought Kenpo to the U.S. He was a big heavy reason for that being in America now. The types of influences that I had, it was brought down from China, it was brought to Japan, and so it's just all the different regions that it comes from. Now it's practiced here. There's many different Kempo schools. The one that I train at, it's changed my life.
How did you get into that?
I was 11 years old, and I was at my school's fundraiser. There was a silent auction going on, and my mom bid on this introduction lesson to get it for me. And she won it. And one day we decided to check out the dojo, and then I had my first 30-minute lesson. And from there, I just immediately fell into it. I've been at it now for about 14 years.
You're a third-degree black belt. And I remember, you know, the ceremony where you got it. It was at a park kind of like this. How does the belt system work? I know it's like, because it's like very color coded, and each color means a different thing. And
yes. Yeah. So white belt is where it starts. And from white, it goes to yellow, to orange, to purple. And those first four ranks are really the beginner ranks. And then you start getting into blue belts and blue greens and green belts. And that's where everything starts to speed up. You know, that's where those are the intermediate ranks. And then from green brown and after that is brown belt. And that's where things start to get advanced. And then you start getting into black belts. And so it starts getting, as you start and as you progress, like things will get more difficult and more challenging. And you know, and you'll start to see the progression from where you started versus where you are now, or where you continue to be, where you want to be.
And third degree black belt, that means there are previous degrees of black belt that you've achieved, like a first degree, second degree. But third degree is definitely higher, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The reason I ask is when I think like first degree, second degree, I usually think in terms of murder crimes. And usually like first degree murder is like the worst possible charge. So I think third degree, you intentionally killed somebody, but it wasn't that big of an intention. No, third degree black belt is like the flipped version of that.
Yes.
Now, you're a third-degree black belt. Is there any further to go, or have you reached the top of the mountain, my friend?
I have actually just started the mountain. I'm actually at the foot of it. There's a lot further to go. So I've been training for 14 years right now, and I got the third degree. If I wanted to get higher, then it's going to start taking longer and longer because it goes all the way up to 10th degree. I've met, so far, only two of them that are 10th degree, and those guys have been training for 40, 50 years. And so that's longer than I've been alive.
Wow. I didn't know it went that high.
Oh, it did.
Good Lord. Wow. Practically speaking, what does having a black belt mean? Like, is it like when you have a master's degree that you can get any teaching job you want? Or are you technically qualified to, like, train other people? Does it mean that you are a dangerous person? What does it mean not just that you've done it for a while, but what are we supposed to assume about your qualifications and skills?
So I used to teach. I taught for 5 years. You don't have to have a black belt to teach. I've known a lot of very great instructors that, to remain anonymous, they would wear a red belt. To keep the rank sort of out of the public eye. Basically, what a red belt is an instructor that's not yet a black belt. When I got my black belt, what it did for me was it just boosted my confidence and made me like more confident in myself. As I started to progress in rank, I started losing more and more self-doubt. Because I was a very doubtful child.
You've said it's very self-defense intensive, this particular gym. That's not the term for it, is it? There's a dojo? Dojo, that's the word. I was like, it's not a gym. No. I know your dojo is very specific about like self-defense. Is it just about that to you, or is it about something more than that?
So I've known people that have taken it. They've taken it to like they've gone to professional events and they've tried to make a profession out of it. But for me, it's just about self. That's what it is. It's just the life skills, defending yourself. You know, being able to defend yourself against any attacker that comes at you. One thing that I like working with is when I'm working with partners is people that are bigger than me, because if I can defend myself against a bigger person, you know, who's to say you can't defend yourself against anyone of any size, you know, because that's the thing. It's a very common misconception. Size doesn't always matter in a fight. Mm-hmm. It's advantageous, but not always. Mm. So if you practice defending yourself against people who are smaller than you, you know, you're not really challenging yourself. If you learn to defend yourself against someone that's bigger than you, someone that's heavier than you, stronger, then and you can successfully defend yourself against that person, whoever they may be, then who's to say you can't defend yourself against anyone?
I had recently seen the original Karate Kid movie the first time since I was like a very little kid, which means I didn't remember it much when I watched it as a kid. But the thing that struck me about that movie was that the conflict was, it wasn't even like a material, like if you win the karate competition, you get money. It was more, it was a philosophical battle of the Cobra Kai, you know, this is about, you know, strength and intimidation and making sure no one can mess with you. And then the Miyagi philosophy of like, this is being one with your inner self. Everything is karate, wax on, wax off. Where would your kind of training lie if you make like a straight line spectrum of those two extremes? Where do you think yours kind of lies?
I would like to say that it's like somewhere in the middle, where you take the confidence side of Cobra Kai, you know, where you don't be afraid to strike, but the Miyagi side, where you restrain yourself from going to extremes that Cobra Kai would go to, or even or the extreme that Chosen went to in the second Karate Kid movie,
which I did not see any of the. I did not see any of these sequels except that reboot. And let me tell you, I still believe they can never make a movie like the first Karate Kid again.
Ain't that the truth?
Because I saw the reboot and I've still proven right on that. What is a basic self-defense skill that you believe everyone should know?
The basic front and knuckle punch. Doesn't matter which hand, if you learn to throw the basic punch and a basic kick, and if you learn the just how to block a regular punch, that's really, because that's where we start off with. That's the foundation of martial arts.
Now, when you think, say, like basic punch, I have often heard that, I remember Dad teaching this to me when he did Taekwondo. It's like, you know, you could do like a swing around type punch, but that could easily get blocked. So really you want to like punch like from the, like towards your torso. I know that's like one, like when you say basic punch, like kind of what is your arm doing?
So your arm is just to extend your arm just straight forward. Like you're throwing a jab. Like a jab or a cross punch. Those are the two basic strikes to learn. So you have your arms here by your shoulders and you just extend it forward, just like you're reaching forward for something, like you're reaching something out of a fridge or just like that. So you're hitting with the first two knuckles on your hand. That's why it's called the front two knuckle punch. In my martial art we call it that. Other arts might call it just a regular front punch.
When you ever watch the first Back to the Future movie, does it ever bother you that George McFly, when he punches Biff, it's like a big swing?
Yes, it's a big old haymaker.
And Biff is like, what? Like, he doesn't see it coming and doesn't protect himself.
Yes, that always bothered me. for lack of form of the punch, he's just swinging wild. So yeah, it did bother me, but you know, they, I mean, he knocked him down, But
it's but like, you think Biff is just an idiot that he didn't.
Yes. Yeah, Biff is a meathead.
I've seen you do demonstrations with like a sword. It's like a very flippy floppy sword. It's not like, you know, solid metal. But so is that like weapons training, or is that more of like a ceremonial type thing?
So that's just weapons training. Weapons training is a little different from the traditional like training where you're learning punch and kicks and you're learning katas. And so what weapons training does, involves and introduces like different movements that we're not usually used to, like how to flower a sword, you know, or how to spin a bow staff. And it introduces new ways of stretching with our katas. But the sword that you're talking about, so there's many different swords. But the broadsword that we have, I have two different kinds. I have one that's really floppy. It's more for like demonstration purposes. And then I have a solid steel one that's a bit heavier, but it's also good for... It's good to practice with that one as well, just for like just weight training, basically, because it's a heavier sword.
And it's made of steel?
Yes.
Is it like a katana shape or?
So it's not a katana shape. It's in the sense that it's thin towards the guard of the sword, and then as it gets longer, it starts to curve out near the tip, and it gets like thicker. So whereas a katana is more thin almost all the way through, with a broadsword it's like thin on one side, and it just gets wider on as it goes down the blade, and it's as opposed to a katana where you could swing with just your arms, with a broadsword it's all the swings that you do come from the torso, so you're moving your whole torso as you're swinging it around. So it's definitely a heavier sword compared to a katana.
What do you think you could could you bring karate to a gun or knife fight? I guess those are two different questions.
You can.
Or do you need a gun or a knife to help you out?
No, it is highly recommended to bring a gun or a knife to help you out. But we do train. We do go over scenarios where if one person has a knife and you have nothing else, what do you do? Mm-hmm. We do go over those scenarios, but gun scenarios, we've hardly ever touched up on those.
Mm-hmm.
Because of it, you know, the situation you could be in. You know, what if it's like the guy that murdered Bruce Wayne's parents? He was at a distance, you know?
Oh, yeah.
With gun defenses, it's very different because you could either be close range or you could be 100 feet away.
Okay.
So,
if you're 100 feet away, do you just run?
You pray. That is your defense. You run and you pray. Okay. You say a small prayer in your head, and that is your defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then you rethink your choices.
Okay. What are some things that people often get wrong about martial arts in your experience?
In my experience, a lot of people get wrong is probably that everyone thinks size is an important thing. As I touched upon earlier, the size of the opponent doesn't always matter. It's very advantageous in some situations. If there's a bigger guy about to stab you with a knife, he has the advantage because he's bigger and he's got an edged weapon. That's one thing. Another thing I think is probably what Hollywood does with it. They introduce a lot of very flashy moves. It looks cool, but there's some things I look at like I wouldn't do that. there's some things that you see in the media that that could work. Like in John Wick chapter 4, he introduces he actually introduced a new way to shoot a gun. He did like a one-hand maneuver thing. I don't remember what he did, but
I remember when those movies first came out and they what do they call it, like gun kata or something, where he's like doing, he's mixing martial arts and shooting, like using the gun both as a firearm and as a blunt instrument in like, you know, the same series of motions.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I would call it too. It's just gun kata, because he's practicing in moves and defending against all the opponents coming from all sides with a gun, and he's not just pulling the trigger. He's smacking people with the butt of it. He's hitting people with the he's what some people might call a pistol whipping. So yeah, he's doing all sorts of things with that that not many people think to do, I would say.
Has there been any entertainment, film and television, that you like to watch as a, or you've enjoyed watching as someone who does karate?
I've enjoyed the Cobra Kai TV series. That was a great series about the, was about martial arts, and that told a story about one dojo that's that was known as the Enemy back in the Karate Kid movies, and it's, they're like the bad dojo, but then you'll start to learn that they're not a bad dojo. They just had a bad sensei, John Kreese. And so it was kind of about bringing that to the light, that Cobra Kai isn't bad. They're just the led with a bad instructor who, and then that's sort of Johnny's journey as the lead sensei of Cobra Kai, is trying to redeem Cobra Kai in the eyes of everyone. And that it's okay to train there. And I kind of liked how they ended that series with him and Daniel coming to terms with each other, and they're both kind of sharing students in the sense that they will be learning offensive moves and being aggressiveness, but also training with Miyagi and with that style, and learning defense as well. So
Cobra Kai seems, I haven't seen it, but it sounds like Cobra Kai is a hard recommend from you.
It is.
What do you make of mixed martial arts, also known as MMA? That's so pretty trendy.
Yeah, so that's, from what I understand, is very sports-oriented. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions about, what if you take a monk and put him against an MMA fighter or a boxer or something. So I would say the MMA fighter every time, because they're not training to defend themselves necessarily. I mean, I'm sure all those MMA fighters and UFC fighters can. I have no doubt that they can defend themselves. But they train for sport. So if they're people are wondering who's going to win that fight against that's the monk or MMA fighter, I would say it's the MMA fighter, because monks, they were also monks were farmers originally. Mm-hmm. So they're not training for sport. They're for them, it's more like a way of life, you know? So, MMA is, it's good. It's very sports oriented. And it's advantageous to know multiple martial arts in practice the way they do.
Is MMA, it's sport. You know, I always think MMA as like boxing, but it's not technically boxing, right?
Right. It's more kickboxing. Kickboxing, grappling, a lot of taekwondo, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, those. I think a prominent one, because of all the submission holds that they do, all the wrestling and all the arm bars and everything about that. That's like one of the most prominent arts that's there that shows, because you got people that there's the stand-up side of it where people are punching and kicking and just slaughtering each other, or total slugfest, and then they start getting into grappling, and so that's one that I noticed most prominent in the world of MMA.
In the world of MMA, and I want to tie UFC to it, but that's just because that's what Tom asked. But I'm not. First of all, so UFC, I'm not an expert on any of this fighting stuff. Like, anything I've seen at UFC has been like parties at your family's house. It's on the TV in the background. But UFC is like, that's just boxing, right? That's not like MMA.
No,
that's
it's MMA.
It is MMA.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the thing. So it's. It's you got two guys in an octagon, and inside the cage, and they're having a total slugfest, and then but they're also wrestling each other and throwing each other. There's a UFC is the most prominent one. That's MMA. I've seen another one. I think it's called Freak Show, or Freak Fight, I think, and.
Sounds like wrestling.
Honestly, it does. It does sound like wrestling. But I was watching one fight with Eddie Hall, the world's strongest man, and he was fighting two guys, the Nefati brothers. I think that's their names. It's 1v2, and you think the Nefati brothers would have the advantage? Well, they have the numbers advantage. But Eddie Hall, he definitely had the size on these two guys. And the match itself was kind of quick. Those are really the only two companies that I know of when it comes to MMA. Just UFC and Freak.
Do you feel MMA bastardizes or dishonors the kind of karate you do? Or do you feel like, well, what I do has its place. What this is its own place. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's kind of that where it. I don't feel it dishonors what I train for, because they're not because they never do anything bashing. Because you got some people that some of those guys that do practice Kenpo. Off the top of my head, I don't know any names, but they're also practicing jiu-jitsu, kickboxing. Taekwondo, judo, they're all, so I don't think they dishonor what I train. They're just, their mindset is different though. Cause where I'm more self-defense oriented, these guys are more sports oriented. You know, they're trying to get the championship belt, and they're trying to make a profession out of it. They're trying to get paid. You know, that's their professional job.
It's like an offensive versus defensive approach, I guess.
Yeah.
Tom wanted to know, you think martial arts should be taught in school? Is it more of a personal journey that's not for everyone, and therefore, you know, for you, it was an extracurricular, so to say?
Yeah, I would say it's more just if you want to learn it, because if you introduce it to schools and it becomes a regular thing, kids are going to just see it as PE, like, oh, I don't want to do this, you know? So,
are you kidding me? It would make PE more fun.
True, but
PE is bullshit. You play basketball, or you walk around the basketball courts and you do absolutely nothing for 60 minutes.
Ain't that the truth? But I would say, in that case, I would say it's more like an extracurricular. But if it were to be taught in schools, then I'd imagine there'd be a lot of waivers that you'd have to sign, a lot of legal papers that you had to go through to allow that, because you're teaching people how to fight and how to punch and kick and how to defend themselves.
These studies could land your child with a broken nose.
Yes. So I would say probably best to keep it, to not make it a requirement. If it's an extracurricular, I think that would probably be the best thing, because then you're not requiring anyone on to beat someone up or to defend themselves against someone huge. Or so, yeah, I'd say just keep it an extracurricular.
I guess I could follow that up with like, you know, because I kind of tease this, is this the kind of thing that's not for everyone? What do you notice about kind of the character of people like in your cohort, people who choose to do martial arts as a passion versus that you don't notice in people that don't do martial arts, I suppose?
Everyone's sort of, I guess, passionate, for lack of a better term, is different. Like, some people have a huge passion for it. Other people, I've seen where they go, yeah, I'm super excited. And then over time, they kind of just grow out of it. So where it's more like a phase to them.
Yeah. I guess, what do you know? We can talk about those individuals in comparisons. Like, you know, the people that grew out of it, that moved on to other things, versus people like you and people that you know that, I imagine you're probably going to do this until arthritis kicks in and you can't do it anymore.
That's
so
my
it's
goal.
Like, what do you? What kind of people would you say are sort of the people like you that choose to do a martial art for the rest of their lives? Like, what is that? What does that serve inside you? People like you that I guess is just not in the people that don't stick with it.
So it's changed my life, and not to say that it hasn't changed the lives of people that have stopped, but it's changed my life in the sense that now I want to sort of encourage people to keep going and not to keep going until arthritis kicks in, like that's my plan, but you know, to give people that confidence, you know, the confidence in themselves for the, if that's what they lack or if that's what they're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. That was my whole goal with training people.
Someone must have broken their foot kickboxing.
Yep. And then they probably lit the house on fire because they got angry. So they sent the fire department.
Continue.
Anyways, so why I started teaching is because I wanted to be able to help people see that to give them the option that if they want to keep going, then please keep going. But if they want to learn it for the purposes of self-defense in the real world and going out and continuing the path that they originally went on, then you know, that's their passion, was just to learn, for be able to defend themselves outside of the world of the dojo, which is I guess everyone's ultimate goal, is be able to defend yourself outside of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not just staying in the dojo and defending myself against people in the dojo. Hopefully I don't have to defend myself outside of it. Hopefully I'm not put in that situation. I hope I make those good choices. Anyways, but it's changed my whole life. It's boosted my confidence. It's like I'm walking taller now than I was, instead of hunched over. I used to walk sort of slouched and wear a hoodie and try and blend in with the wall and everything, and just not want to be anywhere because I was just...
Now you wear cutoff t-shirts all the time.
Yes.
I'm not joking. He's wearing one right now.
I am. Yeah, it's definitely, it's done wonders for me and my confidence, and to help me be happy with who I am. That I hope that it does the same for other people, and I hope that some people can be that people do learn that confidence, that they do, that when it comes down to it, that they are, that they don't freeze in a situation where they're being attacked. That's another thing we try to do, is that's difficult for everyone, is trying not to freeze in a scenario.
My last question is, how has karate shaped your personal view of the world? This doesn't have to be anything, you know, political, like, how does this affect your choices at the ballot? You know, it doesn't have to be that. That's what I ask people if I'm asking about their, like, jobs that they get paid for, but I figured, like, I don't think this really works for karate, but it could be, like, you know, I guess how you view the nature of your existence, spiritual, anything like that. Just sort of how you see things. How has karate affected that?
It's affected things in a big way, in the sense that I'm happier now. Like, just everything's peaceful. It's a beautiful day out here in the park, and I kind of just want to lay down here and do nothing. But for other people, I would like to say that they think the same, but I'm not other people, so. But yeah, it's just made me more at peace with who I am. And with the rest of the world. I'm not shrugging away from everyone. I'm not hiding from everyone I walk by. Sometimes I'll say hi to random people, just wave at them, especially where I work. Where I work in, I work in a warehouse, so where I might be pulled to help people, so I might say, hey, do you need help? So It's made me more helpful and more happy.
Well, thank you. It's great talking with you again, James. I definitely learned a lot more. I mean, I've watched you and your sister do karate for a very long time, but I feel like I've learned something more out of it than I've learned a lot of new things that I didn't really consider before. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been fun.
You know what's interesting? I don't know if you knew this. When it comes to the belts, the color originates from long, long ago, that when you started working on a martial art and all the belts started off as white, depending on how long and how hard you trained, it actually started turning color. This is like hundreds upon hundreds of years ago, you never washed your belt. And that showed how long you've been doing it, because the proof is in the pudding. Like, it's black because it's like 20 years old and I never washed it. So that's where I remember hearing where the color of the belts come from. Nowadays you're just given like the white belt, purple belt, blue belt, brown belt, and all that stuff, and you're given the black belt. But to actually earn the black belt long, long ago, it was because you actually put in the work. Like, it's all like when you saw a black belt, like, you know, 500-600 years ago, is because it's literally just sweat and blood dried up and never washed. Yeah, did you know? That's crazy, huh?
I wonder how that metric could play with my shoes, because I never washed my shoes. My shoes, the whites used to be white, and now they're like a dark gray because I've had them for...
Are these the ones for the bachelor party?
Yeah, these are the ones I wore for the bachelor
party.
They're
almost on 2 years. They're good shoes, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and another thing, too, because you brought it up, it's actually gunfu.
It's gun fu.
Uh-huh.
Not gun kata. Okay.
No, it's gun fu because...
Okay, that sounds way better.
If you remember the movie Equilibrium with Christian Bale?
Yes.
When he was doing all that dual-wield pistol, little gun fu stuff, that gun fu.
Okay.
Because it's about, he was using the pistol as a weapon, but you're, like, bending the bullet around and, like, doing stylized stuff. Yeah, it's called gun fu. Christian Bale, thank you. Thank you, Christian Bale.
All right.
All right, that was a great interview, man. That was awesome.
Yeah, that concludes this week's episode. You can find me on Instagram, at MusicalNoteXTR. Just a lot of pictures of the puppy, who's not here with us because he's with his mama. You can also find us on Patreon. Just give a little.
Just enough to get some in and out, folks. That's all we want.
Yeah.
And hopefully, if we've learned anything from this interview, there'll be no more Karate Kid movies.
I hope so. That last one.
Ugh. Of course, you could tell by the trailer. We're in New York now. Ooh. Yeah. All right. Well, that was a great interview. Hope you all enjoyed that. Thanks again, Travis, for doing that. That was awesome.
You're welcome.
All righty. Well, good afternoon, good evening, good night, folks.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.